Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital, author of the book Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, and the host of the show Wall Street Unspun, which you are listening to live, which we do every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time. We do the show on shortwave radio at 5.07 megahertz and on my website at www.europac.net. As always, we take your calls live throughout the hour, 888-678-9597 is the number to call, 888-678-9597. Anyway, I'm trying to bring up some quotes real quick, and I apologize for the show being a little late to get started. I think we had some technical difficulty with the telephone line. Anyway, it's 888-678-9597 if you want to participate in the show. Anyway, another pretty big week in the markets. A lot more volatility going on in the commodity markets, in the currency markets, in the stock markets. Again, you know, the dollar didn't seem to make much real headway this week, and I think we've also seen some potential strength coming back into the commodities markets, in particular in gold and in oil. I think, you know, a lot of people in the last few weeks or month or so have jumped to the wrong conclusion that the dollar is in a new bull market, that we have a strong dollar, a strengthening dollar. I'm constantly listening to people interviewed on television, where people are being asked, how are you dealing with the strengthening dollar? How are you going to deal with the strong dollar? It's almost a foregone conclusion now that the dollar is going to go up, despite the fact that there's absolutely no reason why it should go up. There also are a lot of people that are starting to talk about $100 crude and $80 crude as if it's a sure thing, as if these higher oil prices were just an aberration. They were just the tail end of a speculative bubble, and that now everything is going to be better. And I think this is a much more bullish attitude, to use that word, for the oil market. You know, not too long ago, a few months ago, it seems like everybody had resigned themselves to the fact that $150 to $200 barrel oil was a foregone conclusion and the new reality that we were going to have to deal with. And I suppose from a sentiment point of view, for people who are bullish oil, that might have been a bit problematic, as too many people started to accept higher oil prices as a fact of life. Now you've got the majority of people again looking for lower oil prices, which I think is setting the stage for an explosive rise in the price of oil. I think the same thing too for gold. I hear a lot of people talking now about $500 and $600 gold, and I think before long we'll be back above $1,000. With those people still looking for $600 gold, and this, you know, I think a lot of this has to do with more wishful thinking than anything else. You know, you've got a lot of people on Wall Street who want to assume that the worst is behind us. And, of course, these are all the same analysts who never saw any of these problems coming, who, when you see them interviewed on television, they say, well, nobody could have possibly predicted this. The things that have happened, I mean, nobody saw it coming. Nobody predicted it. Well, maybe nobody in their world predicted it. But a lot of people, including myself, understood these things and were able to predict it. And the people who found today's situation completely unpredictable, these are the same people who are so confident that the worst is behind us and that the world is going to be rediscovering America, and that money is going to be flowing out of other markets and others, you know, and other currencies back to the dollar, because now you know, the worst is behind us and we're headed for, you know, a strong economic growth once again. This is all a bunch of nonsense. And again, you know, the same people who believe that are the people who were surprised by what's happened. And then, as somebody who was able to forecast very clearly the events that have transpired in the economy, in the credit markets, over the past year or so, I am convinced as ever that the worst is not behind us at all, that it's in front of us, and that we've barely scratched the surface of these problems. And I do think that the rally that we're having now in the dollar is likely the last gasp of what will be a drowning currency. And I think, you know, going back over the last 10 years or so, when I have been, you know, investing in these foreign markets, we have had corrections or declines in the markets. And every time we've had a period like that, thus far anyway, it's been followed by a huge surge. And it seems like the market, before it makes a big move in one direction, it gives you a head fake in the opposite direction first. And I think, if anything, that's designed to break the confidence of some of the people who are in the market, some of the late players, some of the more leveraged players. And so before we move in one way in a big direction, we'll have a head fake in the opposite direction just to catch some people off guard, to shake some people out, and then have the primary move. And I think that's what we're laying the foundation for right now, particularly with the currencies. I think, you know, when the dollar index broke through 80 and we went all the way down to about 71 and change, you know, you would expect at some point we'd have some type of rally where the market would try to get back up to that late 80 level again, which was support for 30 or 40 years. I'm very confident that that long-term support has been broken. It will now hold as resistance. It doesn't mean that the dollar couldn't poke its head above 80, but I don't think it will stay there. I think the head will be severed very quickly. And I think once the market rolls over and the dollar rolls over, not only will we take out the 70 handle, but I think we'll take out 60 as well, 50 as the dollar index heads towards 40, which is relatively one half of the dollar index at 80. And when that happens, you know, I think, you know, your Pacific Capital clients will see a substantial increase in the value of their accounts. You know, I looked at a lot of the brokerage accounts recently because a lot of clients have looked at their accounts and they've seen the declines. And it's interesting how very few people seem to be aware how much of these declines are strictly related to the currency. You know, if you've got an account at your Pacific Capital, and let's say you started the account 3 months ago, 6 months ago, and the account's down 20%, and you see a lot of stocks that are down, and you think, gee, these stocks, you know, they've done horrible, they're down 20%. You know, better than half of that decline, I think roughly 12%, is due to currencies. The currencies are down pretty sharply in the last few months. I think on average about 12% from where they were at their peak. So you're talking about, if someone's down 20%, you know, a little over half of that decline is due to the currencies. And of course, if you started your account recently and you paid a 2-3% commission, then you're talking about a 14 or 15% decline in your portfolio simply because of the exchange rate and the commission, which means of a 20% decline, literally only about 5% is due to the change in the value of the underlying stocks, which, given the market that we're in right now, 5% decline in stock prices is really very little. And, of course, most of that decline is probably the function of two or three stocks that have done particularly poorly during this period of time. If you take out those couple of stocks, and, of course, you can't take them out for the portfolio return, but the majority of the stocks are doing okay. And the stocks that are generally getting beaten up pretty good are those that have to do with commodities, natural resources, the mining stocks and the oil and gas stocks. You know, outside of that universe, with the exception of maybe one stock, you know, the stocks have done pretty well. But what we've had recently is a very, you know, extreme volatility, where not only have we had big moves down in stock markets, but we've had a big move up in the value of the dollar. And so, therefore, you know, if the dollar is moving down and up, rather, and foreign stocks are moving down, if you've got a portfolio of foreign stocks, you've got to expect that that portfolio is going to drop quite a bit because you've got two things working against you. You've got the currency and you've got the stocks. Now, ultimately, we have the dividends working for us, and we're going to continue to collect dividend income, which over time will offset a lot of those short-term declines. But remember, that's the trade-off. If you want to have a portfolio that's going to rise when the dollar falls, which is the most important thing, because I think the dollar is going to collapse, right? So if you want a portfolio that goes up when the dollar goes down, you've got to be willing to accept the fact that that portfolio will fall in value when the dollar rises. That's just going to happen. The dollar is going to rise from time to time. But ultimately, I think the dollar is going to collapse. And when it does, the fact that it rose a few times while we held a foreign portfolio isn't going to matter at all, because we're not transacting. We're not buying the dollars back. We're not selling these stocks. At least I hope we're not doing that, you know, just because the dollar strengthened. You know, we're going to ignore that noise and understand these rallies in the dollar for what they are. But the fundamentals remain terrible for the dollar, and they get worse every single day. And so all we have to do is remember that fact. You know, I've got, as I said, in my own account, I've got a lot of gold stocks, a lot more than my typical client. Those gold stocks have done even worse, right? My gold stocks in general are down by over 30% each and every stock in the last couple of months. That's a huge, huge decline. Does that mean that I'm going to abandon my forecast on gold stocks and gold over the long run because we've had a very violent decline in the short run? Not at all. Not at all. The fundamentals that led me to buy these stocks years ago, those fundamentals are not only still in place, but they're stronger, because in the past, a lot of my forecast hadn't happened yet. I was buying gold and foreign currencies because I saw a lot of things in the future that I believe were going to happen. Now, the vast majority of those things have, in fact, played out the way I forecasted. So most of my forecasts now have actually come true. Not every piece of the puzzle has fallen into place, but a lot more of them have already done so, which should give me more confidence that my ultimate forecast was indeed correct. Because a few years ago, none of my forecasts had come true. It was a much bigger leap of faith to believe all these things were going to happen, and therefore, you know, gold or gold stocks would go up. Now, most of what I predicted has already happened. We just need a few more things to fall into place. But ultimately, I'm convinced that the markets will end up, you know, the way I forecast they would. So we just have to stay the course and realize that the people who are now so sure that the coast is clear and who are, you know, buying a dollar and selling oil and selling gold are the very people who have been consistently wrong on the big picture. And you got to, you know, remember to keep that in mind. So if your portfolio is down 20% or even 30%, I mean, there are certain some portfolios, depending on your mix of stocks, realize that, you know, half of it has to do with the dollar going up. You know, we can't do anything about that. The dollar's gone up, right? We've got a portfolio that's out of the dollar. And if the dollar rises, we have to accept the fact that the portfolio is going to go down, because that's the trade-off. That's the only way the portfolio can go up, when the dollar goes down. And if ultimately the dollar is going to lose 80% or 90% of its value, which it could, in the right circumstances, then we have a portfolio that can go up 5 or 10 times in value. And if you want a portfolio that can do that, that can preserve purchasing power and give you those type of gains in dollars if the dollar collapses, then if the dollar goes up 5 or 10 or 15%, we're going to have to understand that that means the dollar value of our portfolio is going to go down. And if it happens at the same time where stocks are falling, well, you know, it's a 1-2. You know, we're going to lose twice as much. But, of course, it works the other way, right? If all of a sudden we go to a period of time where the dollar is falling and stock prices are rising around the world, well, now we make it up as quickly as it went down, because now we get the gains in the stocks and we get the gains in the currency. And, of course, we still have the dividends all along. So ultimately, as long as the dollar goes back down, and if we get foreign stocks going up, we gain back everything we lost on paper, but we keep accumulating all those dividends. And we get the dividends, you know, during the down markets as well as during the up markets. But I definitely can understand where people could be concerned, and where people can look at their accounts and say, wait a minute, what's going on? My account's going down. You know, it doesn't invalidate our strategy, because our strategy is not to have a portfolio that always goes up. That's impossible. Our strategy is to have a portfolio that's going to preserve your wealth and your purchasing power as a result of my forecast for the collapse in the value of the dollar. And I also believe in inflation worldwide as central banks print a lot of money. So we want to have a portfolio that's heavily weighted towards real, tangible things, not simply government debt. And, of course, during a period of time where dollar is strengthening and asset prices are falling like stocks, then our portfolios are going to go down. You know, that has to, that's what has to happen. If we're going to be able to gain when asset prices rise due to inflation and when the dollar goes down. And so there's nothing wrong with what's happening now, and our strategy is not to try to trade it. I'm not trying to anticipate short-term movements in the currency markets or in the stock markets. I'm not going to try to get in and out, and try to avoid these short-term paper losses because I think the risks are too great. I think it's too difficult to time it exactly right, and I think the risks are in trying to finesse the market, we end up being in the dollar at the time that it collapses. We end up being out of stocks the time they make their biggest rise. So I think you know, history shows that the best way to do this is to make sure we have the right investments in place in the right companies, in the right currencies, and we ride out the bumps in the road. Because remember, the people who are determining these bumps in the road are completely clueless. The vast majority of the people who are investing other people's money and doing it with a lot of leverage are completely clueless, and what they're doing is wrong. You know, it's just like these are the same people that were buying the internet stocks in the 1990s. And, you know, just because, you know, I might have had a conversation with somebody telling them, don't buy these stocks, don't buy these tech stocks, or maybe they owned internet stocks, and I said, get rid of them, sell these stocks, and they sold them, and then they went up 20 or 30%, you know, if they got mad at me and said, look, you don't know what you're talking about. You told me to get out of these stocks, and look how much they've gone up. Let's say that person made the mistake of buying them back, right? Because they had to be in. Well, and then they were stuck, right? I know that the people who followed my advice in the late 1990s and stayed out of those stocks, even though they went up a lot higher, ultimately are the ones that prevailed. The people that ignored my advice, even though in the short run it looked like they were the geniuses and I was the fool, a lot of those people got wiped out. And I think the same thing might happen today to people who are foolish enough to be conned by what's happening in the market, and people who sell their foreign currencies or sell their foreign assets and move back into the U.S., I think those people would be just as foolish as people who jumped into the internet stocks in the late 1990s because they were letting short-term market movements influence their thinking, right? The people who are buying the dollar now, I think, are just as smart and just as savvy as people who are buying tech stocks in 1999. Or in internet stocks. Anyway, I know we got a lot of calls that are then coming up on the line, so let me quickly talk to the first one, Elliot from California.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
How are you?
Good. I was listening to this show last week, and you mentioned that there are two forces in the economy kind of fighting each other. One is deflationary, with the market wanting to reduce the supply of credit, with the ultimate credit contraction being something like $1 trillion, I think you mentioned. The other one is inflationary, where the Fed is trying to counteract that by providing liquidity and maybe expanding their balance sheet, which it seems like they haven't done too much of so far, but it could, you know, they could in the future. And also, independently of those two, you have the world demand for dollars, so that even if we have a reduction in the money supply, which is deflation, demand could fall even more. So prices, we could have price inflation even in an environment where the money supply is contracting.
Yeah, well, what's happening is you're having a credit, right, deflation. You're having, you know, credit expanded and now it's contracting because the money's been lost. The banks no longer have money to lend. And so,
right.
And so what's happening is you're having these asset bubbles deflating like stocks and real estate. But at the same time, the Federal Reserve is creating more money. And if you look at M3, they're creating a lot of money to replace the credit that's been lost. But even though credit is contracting, we're living in an inflationary time period. The government is inflating. And prices, when most people think about inflation, they don't necessarily think about credit and money supply. They think about consumer prices. And the environment that we're in right now is one where consumer prices are going to be headed substantially higher. And the new money that the Fed is creating is going to go strictly into consumer prices and commodities and real stuff. None of it's not going to go into real estate, and it's not going to go into stocks. There you're still having a credit contraction or a deflation. But the money, dollars are losing value, and people around the world don't have demand for those dollars. They don't want to invest those dollars in our assets. So people are buying stuff. And it's not just the United States that is creating money. Money is being created around the world, in very, very excessive fashion. So it's global inflation, but the impetus for that is us, because other central banks are creating money to prevent their currencies from rising against the dollar. And so they're having to inflate their currencies to prevent our currency from losing even more value.
Let me ask you about an imaginary scenario. Let's imagine that the Fed today said we're done creating any more money. So we're not going to expand our balance sheet. You would still say that at this, given that, the dollar would still fall.
Yeah, because the minute they said that, they would basically have to, if they said they were going to do that, that would mean that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would go bankrupt. That would mean that the government would be broke. That would mean that Social Security checks couldn't be paid, that the government pensions, because the government would basically shut down because, you know, the budget deficit is huge. And, you know, the U.S. economy would implode, and, of course, that would be very negative for the dollar. That would be a good thing. I mean, if the Fed actually did that, it would be a good thing. The dollar would fall. It just wouldn't fall to zero. It would still fall a lot because the dollar is still very overvalued. But, you know, they're not going to do that. You know, unfortunately, they're not going to do that. You know, and the problem is, see, there's too many dollars out there already. We've created way too many dollars. They're already in existence. You know, it's just a lot of those dollars, you know, are in our IOUs or in paper. But when the world tries to convert those dollars into real goods, when they try to spend them, that's when you have this huge problem.
Yeah, so is that why you basically talk about the Argentina scenario where they had a fall in their money supply, but the peso got devalued so much that their prices still went up?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's supply and demand, and you can start to reduce the supply of your currency, but if the demand for that currency is falling even faster, then it's going to lose value. And you also have the velocity of money. I mean, you know, how quickly people try to get rid of the money as soon as they get it. And if nobody will hold the dollar for more than a nanosecond, you know, its value is going to plunge.
Yeah. Okay. And kind of a follow-on question on that. The dollar could fall in, I guess, two different ways. One is we could just have an exchange rate decrease, meaning, you know, the foreigners would wait for the dollar to fall enough so that the rate overshoots, and when they buy dollars, they can actually expect them to appreciate instead of get devalued. That's one way. And the other one is we could increase interest rates to make it more attractive for foreigners to hold dollars.
Well, the thing is, ultimately, we have to increase interest rates, but we're not doing that. But the thing is, you know, the interest rates would have to be so high, given our rate of inflation or the likely depreciation of the dollar, that any interest rate high enough to entice somebody to buy dollars would crush the economy and cause them to not want dollars, because the government gets in that position. Every time the economy weakens, what do? They inflate more. They increase government spending. They cut interest rates. So, I mean, basically the world's going to realize, look, we're not going to be able to fool them. You know, U.S. politicians are not going to deliberately do anything to ask American citizens to sacrifice. No one's going to say, hey, the economy is weak, but tough. You know, this is the price we have to pay for years of using credit cards, you know, and not saving and consuming too much. We're going to have to go through this austerity. We're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to let your house price go down, and you're going to have to lose your job. I mean, politicians aren't going to say this. They're going to say, let's do something to make it better. You know, so they're not going to do it. They're not going to raise. They're just going to keep rates low, and it's a disaster.
Okay, last question quickly. How do you explain the M3 going up, but the Fed balance sheet is really not expanding all that much?
Well, the balance sheet I know is expanding. And the more important part about it is the composition of that balance sheet is changed dramatically. You know, where now they have all these mortgages, subprime mortgages, and they're going to be getting these auction rate securities in there, and credit card receivables, and auto loans. They have all kinds of crap in there now that they didn't have before. So the quality of that balance sheet has eroded substantially.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But how does that impact the money supply?
Well, the money supply is growing because they're putting money into circulation when they're buying up that crap.
Well, they bought it up. They basically exchanged it on the bank's balance sheets. You know,
they exchanged it. They took treasuries and they exchanged it. And then what happened was when Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley, when they get those treasuries, they have dollars and they sell them and they have money to put into the economy. So they're expanding money supply. Anyway, thanks for the call. I got to take a quick break and we'll be back for more calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. The number to call, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. You know, real quick, I put an article on the website today from Fortune about the coming credit card crunch, the next crisis. And I was the first person to have pointed this out in my commentaries. I mentioned it several times on television that credit cards were the next subprime because Wall Street securitized credit card bonds in the same way it did with mortgages, and that Americans are starting to fall behind in their credit card payments. These bonds are going to have huge losses, and ultimately it's going to lead to a contraction in credit where the lenders will no longer want to buy these bonds, which means the banks will no longer have access to credit, and they will be shutting down credit cards. Because remember, when Americans are borrowing money, they're not borrowing it from their neighbor. They're borrowing it from China, from Saudi Arabia, from Russia. Right, they're the ones who are buying all these bonds because the products have to be securitized and sold abroad because that's where the savings are. But as these bonds lose value and collapse and they can't sell them anymore, then the banks are limited to their deposits to loan out. They don't have the money. They've lost a lot of it in mortgages as it is. And you're going to see a complete collapse of the credit card market. And that's the last gasp that's holding the U.S. economy together right now. The reason that credit card usage is up so much, the reason that earnings are at record numbers at Visa and MasterCard, is because Americans are putting everything on their credit card now because they don't have the incomes, they don't have the home equity to borrow against, they're just charging on their credit cards because they can. But eventually they won't be able to. The credit cards are going to be taken away from them. The limits are going to be lowered. And this is another article that's finally picking up on this. But this is a major, major disaster looming. Ultimately, it's a good thing, right? It's a good thing that we're not going to be able to spend any borrowed money anymore. But ultimately, when you have an economy that's built on spending borrowed money, when you can't borrow anymore, you can't spend, and the whole thing comes collapsing down. So that, you know, that's articles on the website. Anyway, let me quickly take another call from Brent in Texas.
Hey, Peter, when are you coming to Dallas?
Not sure, but I know eventually we'll be out there. We got a lot of clients out in that area.
Well, I've been listening for about 8 months and invested with you about 3 months ago, and I can roll with the punches with the exchange rate variances with the dollar, and I know that the Australian economy is what you guys really like, and I'm invested pretty heavily there. But there's been a couple of the sour apples. You may have mentioned it before I got on because I was driving home. But I just wanted to briefly ask you, what constitutes a good, strong company? You mentioned that a lot, and I'm in belief with you that choosing good dividend-yielding companies that are stable. However, some of them don't seem to meet that criteria anymore. So when the fundamentals of a company changes, what are some warning signs that you would use to maybe change your stock selection pick list?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can't really tell, like this one nickel mining company, when all of a sudden in a month you get a 70% decline in the price of nickel, and then you get an 800% increase in the cost of sulfur, which is the biggest cost component, and all of a sudden their earnings get collapsed. You know, I don't think the situation is permanent. I mean, either sulfur prices are going to come down or nickel prices are going to go up or some combination. But, you know, if you look at it in a snapshot in time, all of a sudden what was a very, very profitable business is not that profitable anymore. But the question is, how long is this situation going to persist? So sometimes, you know, you can buy a company and, you know, it can look very solid, but then you can see such a dramatic change in circumstances. But the question is it going to persist or not? And there have been a couple of companies where things have changed very remarkably. I mean, one in particular has to do with basically what amounted to a utility fund out in Australia, which was the largest owner of utility assets, which, you know, admittedly had a decent amount of debt associated with it, which was not problematic at all until very recently. And it's really a function of the market, which is something that I hadn't anticipated, this type of adverse reaction. But it is a unique circumstance that doesn't exist with any of the other stocks that we own. It was kind of unique to this particular stock, which initially looked like an interesting idea because it had a good dividend and it owned all these utilities, which was an asset class that I like to own. But in most cases, you know, these types of swings in the market where companies' fortunes are, you know, improve in some period of time and then go down, I mean, you get some cyclical nature to various companies, and, you know, they can be earning a lot of money in one particular environment, and then all of a sudden something happens and they're not doing that well. I'd say by and large, the vast majority of our stocks have had very little change in their earnings. There's just been a few, but as far as none of them yet have caused us to change anything, although there have been. We did stop recommending for new money the problem utility in Australia, but some of the other stocks, you know, we're still buying them despite the fact they're a lot cheaper, although some of the stocks we clearly label as speculative. And so what happens is when we build a portfolio for somebody, you know, 90% of the stocks might be the ones that are the more conservative stocks, yet there's going to be some that we consider to be more speculative that we still put into the portfolio that, taken on their own, you know, might seem to be, oh, this is very speculative. But when you put it as part of an overall portfolio, it's not nearly as speculative. And ultimately, those types of stocks could add a lot to the returns of the portfolio.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of follow some of these out-of-the-country companies, but these particular trust, I guess from a generic standpoint, Peter, are there some warning signs that we should look for, or should we do more regular reviews of some of the stock picks?
Some of them you can't tell. Like all of a sudden, like one of the stocks that we have, you know, they announce overnight, you know, out of the blue, we're cutting our dividend, and the stock drops by 30 or 40%. You know, and I think it's kind of a emotional reaction to say, oh, gee, they're cutting the dividend, I'm going to dump the stock, even though the earnings are still there. They're just choosing to retain the dividends instead of paying them out. It doesn't mean that the income is not part of the company. But what I am doing, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this on the air, but we hired our first analyst actually today, and I'm in the process. I hired a director of capital markets to oversee the research division, and we are ultimately going to hire, at least in the short run, probably two to three analysts. Probably 4 to 5 analysts over the next, 3 to 6 months. Ultimately, we might have twice as many analysts working full time for Euro Pacific Capital, analyzing and following our stocks to a greater degree than we have in the past. What I've been doing in the past is mainly relying on the research prepared by analysts at other firms, mainly in the sell side, with which we do business with, which is how the majority of people invest. They take research prepared by the various brokerage firms and investment banks, and utilize that research. What I'm going to be doing now that, and I think now that we have a lot larger client base, I can afford to make the investment that a couple years ago or even a year ago I probably couldn't have afforded, and that's to hire our own independent analysts to evaluate these stocks on our own, to do independent research, not talking to the brokers that cover them, but actually talking to the companies themselves, meeting with and talking with their customers, their suppliers, doing on-the-ground, bottom-up research on our own, which we're going to be doing. And so hopefully that'll give us an even better handle on these stocks and to be able to make better, you know, both better recommendations and to try to anticipate some of the things that might be happening with some of these companies. So we're going to really be getting started with that. And as we start writing our research, all the research reports that we write will be available to clients only through a password on the Euro Pacific Capital website. And you'll be able to read our independent reports, our estimates for their earnings and all that, as well as research notes that the analysts put out who are covering these stocks. You know, they might put a research note out, you know, on a weekly basis or if something's going on, and that information will be available on the website.
That's a great idea. I think a lot of us would appreciate that. Do you see any other of our companies that we're investing in being possibly squeezed by the debt and liquidity issue that these particular trusts were, Peter?
Yeah, no, there's just a couple of, you know, most of them don't have a lot of debt. Most of the stocks we have, the fact that they've gone down is merely a function of the exchange rate. You know, when you look at your statement, you look at your Euro Pacific Capital statement, and you see a stock, and you see, oh, the stock is down 8%. You know, that stock might be up 4 or 5% because the price you see is the U.S. dollar price of the security. You're not seeing what the price is in the local market. And you know, when you see, if someone says, you know, the Australian market is down 10% year to date, that's in Australian money, right? In American money, it could be down, you know, 24%. Right, based on what's happened to the Australian dollar. So when you look at those stock prices, people might assume, gee, this stock has gone down. In most cases, the stocks have not gone down. They've gone up, or they've gone down a little bit. It's that the declines are exaggerated. Now, some of the cases where the stock is way down, let's say the stock is down 30 or 40%, and you think, gee, the stock really got killed. Well, it's probably the currency is down 12 or 13 or 14%, you paid a commission of 2 or 3%, and then the stock is down, you know, 15% or so. So when you add all those together, you know, it makes for a big decline.
Yeah. Do you think that there will be the phenomenon of naked short selling in some of these other markets like we saw here in the U.S.?
Short selling, but I do think, and here's another thing, I think that most of the stocks that we're buying, right, They're really good companies with good dividends. They're so good that a lot of money went into these stocks over the last several years. I think a lot of hedge funds are in the same stocks that we're in, that are in our portfolios. And the problem is these funds are getting crushed. They're getting a lot of redemptions. They're getting margin calls. And so a lot of the stocks are going down, not because the companies are over-leveraged, but because the shareholders are over-leveraged, and they're having to sell. And that's what's going on. There's a lot of people that are exiting these stocks at the same time. And so, you know, there's a lot of volatility in the prices, not because of a big fluctuation in the earnings of the companies, but it's the shareholders that are having the volatility. And it's creating this noise in the market. Ultimately, that's what it's going to be. You know, for the vast majority of these stocks, it's all going to be noise. You know, if
it would be good to hear a long-term investor speak, because I'm only talking from a 3.5 month reality, because that's my reality, right? But having the long-term approach and say, hey, my reality is I've been with Peter for 5 years, and you know, you just got to go with the flow. But it's very good to consider the dollar rally and the impact it has with other markets. So appreciate it, and I'll hang up now and listen to the next caller.
Yeah, thanks. You know, the only other time, I think, in the 10 years or so that I've been buying foreign stocks for people that I've seen something similar to what's happening now, all right, was in the 1997 Asian economic crisis, right? And during that period of time, 97, 98, foreign stock markets got clobbered, and the dollar strengthened. And that's when I saw clients that were down, you know, 20-30%, you know, in a given year, maybe a little bit more. You know, I remember, you know, my mother had an account at that time. I remember her account getting beat up. And I remember other accounts, you know, because I first, you know, I didn't have nearly as many clients back then because I had really started doing this, you know, foreign stocks in maybe 95, 96. So 97 comes along. I didn't have that many clients. And it was certainly rough. You know, 97 and 98 were very, very rough years. But that laid the foundation for a spectacular move. And I remember I had a few accounts that I lost back then. A few people did not stick it out. Some, I lost some accounts back then because people were upset at the short-term performance. But the people who stuck it out and who averaged down, those are the people who saw, you know, the most spectacular gains from 2000 until 2007. I mean, this year has, you know, been a down year, but until that, and the years like 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004 were huge, huge years, right? And, you know, clients who got discouraged because their account was down 30% and cashed in, and I sent them a check. I mean, I can still find those people, and it still bothers me. I'm still upset at the few accounts I lost because I know what these people left on the table. I can imagine where their accounts would be today. You know, I'm staying at the house of one of my clients in the Hamptons this week, who was with me back then, whose account, you know, went down during that period of time. But she stuck it out, and her account, you know, I mean, it was, you know, a huge, huge gainer, a lot, just like my mother. You know, my mother went through the same thing. My mom had an account, he had a pension, and I remember during that time her account was doing very poorly in 98 and 99. In contrast, all of her friends' accounts were doing great because all those accounts were in tech stocks and internet stocks, and she was getting frustrated that her friends were making so much money and she wasn't. And, you know, her friends ultimately lost all those phony profits. Her friend who was a stockbroker, who was getting them all into that, was working at Merrill Lynch at the time, is no longer a stockbroker. She's been out of the industry for a long time. Of course, she only became a stockbroker in the late 1990s anyway. She had been a shoe salesman. You know, she didn't know. She got, you know, fooled by all this. But ultimately, my mother's account ended up doing extremely well because she wrote it out. Now, I mean, I don't know for sure that this is going to be the same, but it looks a lot like it, right? It looks a lot like it to me. I mean, we have a big move down, and that sets you up for an even bigger move in the opposite direction. And I think that the people who ride this out are going to be rewarded, you know? And I think it's unfortunate because I think there will be some people, like the clients I had in 1998, 1999, who were shaken out, right, who sold their stocks, and they're going to miss out. And it's unfortunate, you know. Fortunately, I was able to persuade most of my clients back then to stick with me and to add to their accounts. And I think that's the main reason that I ended up being as successful as I was because I was, you know, I a lot of my my accounts during 2004 and 5 and 6, a lot of that money I was able to raise was a result of the clients that I had who did stick it out and then who saw these returns and who were able to add to their accounts and to send me referrals. So that's what I think is going to happen again. Anyway, let me pick up on the phones. I think I left off. Is it the Peter in California?
Yes. Hello?
Peter?
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is Peter?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, great. Great talking to you. I have a comment and a question. This week was kind of frustrating to see inflation go up the highest in 20 years and then gold immediately go down. It just makes me scratch my head. And it just seems like the people really aren't looking long trend. They're just looking short trend. But it's also a shame that the gold is tied to the U.S. dollar rate and not inflation because between 1980 and 2000, even though there was lots of inflation, gold went lower. So my question to you is this. Do you see in the near term or maybe the intermediate term a decoupling of gold from the U.S. dollar? And
no, the reason that gold went down during the 80s was because it peaked at 850 in 1980. So it way overshot during the 70s. And so it spent the 1980s adjusting for that overshoot. But, you know, ultimately, you know, gold is going to trade. When it's trading right now, it's kind of trading with the dollar. But ultimately, I think it will decouple, and I think gold is going to trade not simply versus the dollar, but versus currencies. I think ultimately gold is going to react to weak economic news in Europe by rising, not falling. Because what happens is you get weak economic news in Europe, the dollar rises because the euro falls against the dollar, and then gold goes down. I think you're going to ultimately see gold going up when the euro weakens, not simply when the euro strengthens. But in the meantime, I think this is a short-term blip. I think it's a good buy for both gold and silver. And, you know, if you're not in the market, I would definitely take advantage of this. And even if you are in the market and you were looking for an entry point to move in more money, I think this is it.
So you think that more people around the world will become more aware of their own fiat currency problems? Because it doesn't seem like most people really are aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I believe. I think so.
Yeah. Do you see any signs that there is an increase, that they are becoming more aware, and that this...
Not necessarily, but I mean, I think it's going to happen. I mean, you know, there's just no way around it.
Yeah, I'm very confident.
Inflation that's being created now is enormous. But anyway, thank you quick for the call.
Okay.
I'm going to take the...
For answering.
One quick commercial break, and I'll be right back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back for the final segment. I think I have three callers on hold, which should do it for the night. Hey, let's go to Joey in Panama.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Good, how are you?
Good. I have a question for you. I'm a fee-only financial planner, and so as part of the services that I offer, you know, I sit down with the customer and say, hey, you know, where are you now? Where do you want to get to in the future? Let's talk about financial goals. How much do you want to retire on? Obviously, let's inflate those numbers. Let's look at the assets that you have now and how they're growing and the kinds of investments and all that kind of stuff. So when I think about everything that you're talking about in the hyperinflation, when I get into my plan, I have to put in, you know, an inflation rate going forward, right? And so traditionally, you know, in the past, to be quite honest, before I read your book and learned all about this stuff, I was using, 3-4% type thing. And you know that when you compound a number at 4% going forward for 20-30 years, it gets very big very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I started jumping that number up, you know, to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And at one point I thought, well, you know, as long as the real rate of return that my customer earns is 2%, so whether it's 6% return minus 4% inflation or 10% return minus 8% inflation, you know, that would be the same. It turns out, obviously because of the compounding, it's not even close. It's a huge difference, even though the real return on that person's assets is 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, as a planner, you know, going forward, if I want to stick an inflation rate into that plan, you know, if I stick a 10% inflation into that thing going forward, the numbers will get so large that it'll probably make the plan look ridiculous to the person. And so my question is, you know, if we have a period of very, very high inflation followed by a horrible crash like we're talking about, at some point, do we then lower it down so that I can pick a number that puts in that plan that I can say, hey, look, let's use 6% going forward for the next
year? Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't think you can do financial planning in dollars. I think when you're talking about a currency that could collapse, I think, you know, trying to plan using that currency doesn't even make any sense. So it's difficult, the position that you're in. I think what you need to do is, you know, you need to throw out all these cookie-cutter plans and start adopting a foreign approach. I mean, let level with your clients. Say, look, you know, I don't think we can implant a portfolio using U.S. dollars as a benchmark. I think the dollar is in grave danger. I think that, you know, the people who have any savings are ultimately going to be the scapegoats here. They're going to be the patsies, and they're going to have to be paying for all the mortgage bailouts and credit card bailouts and unfunded liabilities. And so it doesn't make sense to save any wealth, to accumulate any savings, if they're just going to be taken from you through inflation and redistributed to your fellow citizens who have no savings. So I think if you're counseling somebody, you got to give them the facts. You got to tell them that they need to save in foreign assets. They need to save in foreign currencies.
Well, that's
try to work out a work out a plan for that. You know.
Well, that's actually what I've been doing. In fact, I'm actually sending customers to you guys as we speak because I completely agree with everything you're saying. I guess the challenge for me then would be is that the assumption of doing the financial plan in dollars. Maybe what I have to try to see is how I can do that financial plan in another currency that will be more stable so that the numbers that I put in on the inflation side...
Just that their expenditures are in dollars. So it's just, I think it's very hard to try to figure out how to come up with a real plan, you know, that where you can put in numbers. I just think the plan should just be, look, we need to save as much money as we can in foreign currencies, and that's just the bottom line. Our commodities are real stuff. Because, see, ultimately, I think things are going to change. I mean, I don't even know, like I say, I think college tuition is going to collapse. I think, you know, so I think people are saying, oh, how am I going to send my kids to college, you know, in 15 years? I think college is going to get very inexpensive. I think that's one of the few things where prices are going to fall. And particularly, especially if you have, you know, gold or euros to pay the tuition with. But even if you have dollars, I mean, I think tuitions could come down. So there's things are going to change. And I think the cost of health care, of nursing is going to get a lot lower. So people, you know, especially if people have, you know, real assets. I mean, the nothing might go down in terms of dollars, actually, if inflation is bad enough. But people will, you know, have some income that will rise. But if you've got your money in other currencies, you know, people could find that living in the United States becomes very inexpensive. You know, it'll still be, you know, if you want to import a BMW or you want to take a trip to Europe or you want to use something like you want to buy a new Sony, those things could still be expensive. But to the extent that you're going to be utilizing local labor, you know, you might find that you're, you know, that things cost a lot less than you think.
Okay, so just another quick question. I heard on one of your calls that you talked about that what's going on with the economies abroad is more a function of the fact that they basically used their savings and lent it to the United States and lost a lot of that savings. And so what I want to understand is I understand that the central banks, you know, maybe the Chinese or the Saudis bought, you know, all these securitized investments that went down. But when you talk about, like, the banks that you hear, the banks even in the U.S. and abroad who are saying, you know, we're going to write off $5 billion, whatever, they also were buying these same securities that were being...
Yes, of course. The foreign central banks were big buyers and still are, and still big holders of our debt. Yeah, the whole world. I mean, we've been borrowing from everybody, from the richest to the poorest countries in the world. America is an equal opportunity borrower. We borrow from everybody and we screw everybody. And the bottom line is, though, when they realize that we're deadbeats and we can't pay back the money, they're not going to line up to loan us anymore. And that's when their problems are solved and our problems just begin. But anyway, thanks for the call. We know we're running out of time. We're going to go a little late, I think, as we start late. The last caller is Larry from Arizona.
All right. Can you hear me okay?
I got you.
All right. When you're giving out advice, or when does it become prudent or wise to simply take your money and invest in your own business? Like, how do you make that decision for...
In your business. I mean, it depends on what your business is. I mean, you're probably a better judge of your business than I am. I mean, I'm investing more money in my business now in Euro-Pacific Capital. I'm investing in these analysts that I'm hiring. That's an investment. It's I use earnings that I might have invested elsewhere, and I plow it back into the business. I think it's a good use of my income. But you know, I don't know. People, different businesses. I mean, generally, your own business is probably your best investment. I mean, you know it better than anybody. And if you can fund it from cash flow, then it's better than paying taxes on it. And but you know, you got to understand, you have to look at what business you're in. I mean, there are some businesses in this country that I feel positive about, and there's some that I think are going to be difficult. I actually cover a lot of this in my new book. You know, what types of businesses do I think will flourish in this country, and which ones do I think will flounder? I write about that in my book. You know, that's coming up, the little book of bull moves and bear markets.
So if you had a client that had a business that was generating cash flow, like how do you, if you have extra cash flow, you plan on using it for the business, but you're not using it at that second, where do you keep that cash?
Well, if you're talking about cash that, you know, that you need in the short run, you know, not money that you can really set aside for 3 to 5 years or longer, I wouldn't do anything with it. I mean, I can't invest money when there's a short time horizon. As you can see, obviously, look what's happened in the last few months. If somebody had invested money with me 3 months ago, that was short-term money, and they needed it back now, the return would be terrible. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in the short run. Now, obviously, once you've had a big drop, I mean, if somebody wanted to invest some short-term money now, given the big decline we've had, it probably wouldn't be that bad an idea. But who knows? Maybe the market gets even worse before it gets better. I don't have a crystal ball. So unless people have a longer-term time horizon, I don't recommend people do anything with the money. Just, you know, save it. Keep it in the bank, you know, or hopefully it's the bank that won't.
Dollars, I mean... It's,
yeah, because, well, your business is a dollar-based business, you know. I mean, obviously you take less risk if you just park it in the Japanese yen, for example, but you have to be understand that when you need the money 2 or 3 months from now, the yen could be 5% lower, which means you would have lost. You have to be willing to accept that. But, yeah, if the dollar ultimately collapses, you know, it could collapse 40% overnight one day. And so, yeah, it would be a shame to have all that cash sitting around when that happened.
So is it possible that you're better off just keeping it in, you know, metals? Or, I mean, all these currencies seem like they're pretty much doing the same thing. They're all...
Right. Well, look, gold can go down. How do you know what's going to happen to gold in the short run? You don't know. I mean, I don't know how quickly you need the money back. And whether you should invest more in your own business or invest abroad, I mean, your business is probably throwing off U.S. dollar revenue. And, you know, if you know, you might want to get some income coming from other sources.
Okay. So which is the least risky of all the possible? Let's say your time horizon is you're not sure. You might need the money within a year. You might need it within 6 months. What's the least risky place to park?
Well, probably the least risky is just straight foreign currency. Pick a currency like the Japanese yen or the Singapore dollar, the Swiss franc. You know, just own the currency itself, because now you don't have any stock market risk. You don't have any stock-specific risk. The only thing you have is foreign exchange risk. The only risk you have is that the dollar rises during your time horizon. You know, so you've got pure protection out of the dollar, and you have no other factor other than the exchange rates. You know, you can also just buy gold bullion, you know, but although your transaction costs might be a little higher or depending on, you know, how you buy it.
Okay. But why would you recommend another fiat currency? Aren't they all basically possessing the same fundamental flaw?
No. Well, they all sink, but at different rates. And I just think the dollar is going to sink faster than the other currencies. I think we have, you know, worse problems. It's like currency triage. You know, you pick the ones that have the least problems. You know, it's a choice. Like when you vote, anybody who's going to vote and who's going to pick between McCain or Obama is inevitably making the choice between the lesser of the two evils. And ultimately, when you pick the yen over the dollar, that's what you're doing.
But why not pick a hard currency like gold or silver?
You can pick it. I think gold might be a little bit more volatile during a short period of time against the dollar. So, you know, you're more likely to get, let's say, a 10% drop in the price of gold than a 10% drop in the value of the yen. You ask me what would be, you know, a short-term place to park the money. But anyway, I know, thanks for the call, because I am running out of time here.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, again, for listening. You've been listening to Wall Street Unspun. I'm Peter Schiff. I'm the host of the show. We do this show every Wednesday live, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. You can listen to it on my website, www.europac.net, where we archive all the shows. You can also pick it up on shortwave, 5.07 megahertz. If you miss it, we repeat it on Saturdays at 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, on 9.32 megahertz. And again, remember to call the office. You want to speak to a broker, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Also, as a note, if you haven't watched my mortgage banker's speech on YouTube, make sure and watch that. It's a must-watch video up on YouTube. There are 8 clips. Just Google, or rather YouTube, Peter Schiff, Mortgage Bankers, and you'll see it. And if you haven't picked up a copy of my book, Crash Proof, make sure and buy and read that book before my next book comes out in October. It's Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. Anyway, I'm doing this show live from Bridgehampton, New York. I will be back in Connecticut next week at this time. Actually, I might even be in Minneapolis for the Ron Paul, counter-Republican convention. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be back again next week. So long.